Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Good afternoon. We're getting fishy with it this afternoon. I've got some people in here who know more about seafood and fish than you could quite possibly poke a stick at. Winter is a perfect season for eating seafood, so we're going to get fishy with it right here. And we're also going to have a bit of disco just because we can. Yes, indeed we are. It is almost 7 minutes past one, almost 14 degrees, heading for top of just 15. You're on Joy 94.9. My name is Pete Dillon. You might know me as Tubby. And this is Cravings, your hour of food and beverage. Terps and Tucker, as Macca likes to call it. We are talking today all things fish. I have two people in the studio, both of them furiously knowledgeable about the subject, because it is that time of the year when we should be eating more seafood because a lot of it is in season. Somebody who's written a book about seasonality and fish is the delightful Hilary McNevin. Welcome back to my studio.
Thank you. Am I on?
Oh.
Where am I?
There I am.
There you are.
Thank
Sorry.
You.
You know,
thank
I hit
you.
The wrong button.
Welcome. Welcome to me.
Welcome to you.
Thank you, and thank you for having me back.
Well, it's good to
and
have
having
you back.
Us back.
Mm, it's yes. good to have you back because it's been a little
you.
While since we spoke with Donovan Cook, who is the author of a book about seafood and cooking it at home, and all because he is at the Atlantic and he deals with seafood every day. He has a vast knowledge, and he is now very mindful of his carbon footprint. Donovan Cook, welcome back.
Good afternoon. How are you? You. Carbon footprint. Here we go again.
Yeah. Here we go. I actually was just doing some maths. It's 11 years ago.
11 years was all a little bit slimmer, a little bit younger, and a little bit less knowledgeable.
We're yes. all still under 50, I will say
yes,
that.
Yes, indeed.
Just, yeah.
Donovan and I just worked out there's only a couple of months between us, but I think you're ahead of both of us, aren't you?
We were all, three of us actually are all born in the same year. Yes. I am the eldest of yes. the three of us.
She's the matriarch.
Yeah. May, July and October, I believe our birthdays are.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So 5 months between us, that's all right.
Yeah,
and
year.
None of us look a day over 35, I swear.
I settle for 38 these days.
The carbon footprint discussion, for those that don't know, that are playing at home, 11 years ago, I was a naive young man journalist sitting in a masterclass at the Langham as part of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. And here is this chef who's talking about, he was at the Hong Kong Jockey Club. He had this bottomless pit of money, every piece of equipment known to mankind that he wanted, he had. And he was talking about flying foie gras from France and barramundi from Queensland and Lord knows what from elsewhere. And foolishly, when it came to the Q&A session in the masterclass, I popped my hand up and said, excuse me, Mr. Cook, but about your carbon footprint. There was a ridiculously long pause, and if looks could kill, I would not have been presenting this program for 6 years because I copped a look that was at best withering.
Yes.
And at worst.
I answered your question politely, yeah?
You did answer my question politely. Until sometime later on the same day, we were at what used to be the gala dinner, the gala yes. ball, and I had popped outside for a bit of fresh air and perhaps a Marlboro Light, and bumped into Mr. Cook and I said about that carbon footprint, and he used language that is not suitable for me to repeat. And so every
at
time
this
I
hour of the day.
Well, at any hour of the day, really. Post service, maybe in a kitchen brigade.
Fantastic.
But this sort of running joke that Donovan and I now have about his carbon footprint. So at the Atlantic, of course, your carbon footprint is very minimal because
yes.
You use predominantly fresh stuff.
Yeah, we use, as I said last time we spoke, we are a restaurant that believes in sustainability, and we use a local product. We get minimum product from overseas and try and use the product at its best. As you spoke about earlier, seafood's at its prime now. However, there's some stigma in Australia where you should eat oysters in the summer when they're actually at the worst.
Mm. We eat all of this stuff for Christmas. Hilary, it's sort of a bit astounding that prawns and oysters and fish, those things that we traditionally have as that sort of alternative
yes.
Christmas lunch, aren't in fact in season.
No, I know. And it's, I think perhaps, say, for my family, for example, it's Easter. We yep. actually, Mum does this big seafood yep. thing at Easter. And yes, it's starting to cool down, so that's reasonable. But it's so interesting. Oysters are spawning. But I have, Donovan has told a story where, didn't you have customers recently that came in and asked for creamy oysters?
Yeah, somebody said the oysters aren't very good because he likes them when they're really creamy and milky.
Yeah.
I told him to come back in December
yeah.
when they're at the prime.
So I think...
prime spawn.
Yeah. But I think it is a funny, I wonder what it is if we just associate seafood with lighter dining or lighter, you know, and I say it like that because it's like, I just like something light.
With a salad.
Yeah, with a salad. And I just don't, seafood can be robust and hearty and
for
oily.
Sure.
And
this time of year, the flesh of the fish, because they have to fight against the colder weather. The muscles are firmer. They have to fight for the food because it's more scarce. Mm. The actual, say, for instance, a piece of snapper, if you get a big 4-kilo snapper, the texture of the fish is totally different.
Yes.
It's a lot firmer, which endears itself.
You probably get slightly less for your 4 kilos because the muscle is a bit more dense.
Chris. Mm. But you can actually adhere meat products with it. You can actually do more winter-style vegetables like using celeriacs and parsnips, mm-hmm. salsify, stuff like that. And you can put it with confit, or you can put it with confit chicken or a meat jus or beef cheek, all these sort of things.
What would you do with, how would you cook that snapper then with the, so you've got the duck confit?
I'm going to be fair and be Tony Jones. We'll take that as comment and I'm going to give you time to think about it because I have to play a quick message. It is 30
Thank
minutes
you,
past one here on Joy 94.9. I've been saying that all morning. It's remarkable that I can't get it right. We are going to continue this discussion with Donovan and Hilary. Of course, we'd like to hear from you. 0427 Joy 949. You can send us a text message. You can email onair@joy.org.au. You can phone 1300-JOY949. I think Mushin is still on the desk. And or you can send us a tweet to cravings_joy949. If there is a question you have about seafood in general or fish or anything that you want to know about the subject about which we speak, do get in touch with us. You are on Cravings here on Joy94.9. It's 13 minutes past one.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy94.9.
In winter.
In winter. You are on Joy 94.9, 13 minutes past one. I should have played a little thing in there to give Hilary a moment to finish her point. We are talking about seafood, and of course winter is the perfect time to be eating seafood. It's not really something that we should be eating too much of in summer for several reasons. It's not seasonable, or it's certainly not local if it is in season. And, you know, seafood should be on your table for winter and perhaps off the table for Christmas.
Yeah, I don't know if off completely is correct, because, Donovan, would you say, I've heard some people say that they consider New Zealand as part of, when we say local, they consider Australia
for sure.
And New Zealand in
for
that.
Sure.
So naturally cooler waters there. So could yep. we, for example, get New Zealand flounder at Christmas time and,
yeah, for
and
sure.
enjoy that, and that'd look beautiful on the table. So it's about...
But balancing
thinking,
it from where it is, you know,
yep.
it's like you won't get anything from Queensland in the middle of summer because obviously the water's a lot warmer.
Yes. Mm.
And stuff from Tasmania in summer because the water as well there is pretty cold is okay.
Yes.
They're actually the best oysters in the summer to eat, the Tasmanians, because the water's colder.
Yep.
Yes.
And they're not quite as big as the South Australian Pacific ones.
How do you actually, through December, because there are people who love oysters all year round.
Yep.
How do you juggle that through the summer season? Because can you get, is it as simple as getting them from different regions and
it's
talking
simple
to the supplier?
Because they spawn at different times of the year.
Yeah.
Whether it be a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, even almost a month.
Yeah.
So basically my supplier will send no oyster to me unless he's shucked at least half a dozen of a sack that I buy.
Okay.
And there's also introduced triploids, which is ones that don't spawn, but again, they're not reliable. You can't get them all the time.
Can you tell us a little bit about them? They're interesting triploids. And can you buy them at, over the counter?
Not really.
No.
They're supposed to spawn at a totally different time to everyone, all the other ones.
Right.
But there's not enough of them. So I end up having to use normal oysters anyway.
When I was over in Port Lincoln doing a bit of a look around with the Hiramasa kingfish and some of the tuna and the oyster farms at near Port Lincoln, the best oysters in the country.
Okay.
Ferretti.
No. Anyway.
We'll look it up.
No, it'll come to me in a second. They had these very flat oysters that look nothing like the sort of bowl.
Like the Benghazi ones.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Do they spawn at a different time of year, or are they eaten at a different time of the year?
They spawn at a different time, but they're actually the indigenous oyster to the country. And they're a specialist kind of flavour.
They are. Did you sell them at the Atlantic?
I've sold them a few times, but they didn't get positive feedback.
They're pretty intense in flavour, would you say?
Yeah.
And quite meaty.
Meaty,
intense. Texture.
They look similar to a bell and oyster, but they're different hemispheres away from it.
I'm actually talking about Coffin Bay oysters. I can't believe
Thank
that
you,
I couldn't
Coffin
get that
Bay.
Out of my brain.
There we go.
Coffin Bay
totally
is a good
different. Coffin Bay, totally different oyster to Ngazi.
Yes.
Different shape and everything.
But they do grow the Ngazis in that area, in that Port Lincoln area.
Rock oysters are native to Australia too. Pacifics were introduced in 1947 after World War II.
See? Look at you. See, you are the font of all
knowledge. That's why she helped me write the book. She's got more knowledge than me on that stuff.
No, but so rock oysters are also a native to Australia. Mm. But
so Sydney.
But the thing is, a lot of people
grown around Hawkesbury.
Yeah,
predominantly.
Sydney, it's New South Wales,
The thing is with the Sydney Rock, for me, out of all of them, they're the best. However, they're not big. And unfortunately, people like big oysters. So I had somebody in the restaurant last week say, "What's that? It's not an oyster." Mm-hmm. They're like little Karamoto Sydney Rock oysters. Mm. Tiny, but beautiful.
Kumamoto style. See, that's another. That's another beast of oyster as well, which is tiny but deep. So it's fleshy. They're delicious and delicate. But are they hard to sell? Because people want that big.
They like to see this big robust shell, and inside a big meaty oyster is obviously not too creamy. But
yes.
That guy the other day wanted creamy oysters, so maybe I should get.
Well, we can just, I think, on radio say that he's a bit of a moron.
Yes.
He might be a lovely man in other aspects.
He
of
may
his
be,
life.
Indeed. If we look at some of the other. So I want to sort of shift slightly to crustaceans and prawns. So is it a good time of the year to be eating southern grown or southern farmed prawns in particular?
The crayfish itself, let's talk crayfish first, because crayfish is in the prime of its season.
Yep.
Around November, December, January.
Yes.
However, because now it's predominantly exported, the price never comes down. When I first came here 20-odd years ago, you could get crays for $58 a kilo.
Wow.
Now the flat chat 100. At the moment, they're 140 a kilo because all the size crayfish go directly to
Japan,
China.
Yep.
And they get a better dollar for it. So to be fair to the fishermen, they've only got a quota and it's their livelihood, so they're not going to squeeze you Christmas, but they're at the best over the 3 months.
And prawns.
There's
a whole
deep
sea
prawns.
As many different prawns as there are other things, but certainly there's tiger prawns and there's king prawns and then there's school prawns. So
the deeper the sea, the better the prawn that time of year.
Right. So can we buy deep sea prawns?
Yeah.
Over the counter at the fishmonger.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I always normally the big ones are like a U6. There'll be six prawns per kilo.
Right.
They're not cheap.
Mm. Yes.
But you only need one or two.
One or two, and it's fine.
Because U6 and U8 are smaller, aren't they? Isn't it go that way?
Yeah, six pieces per kilo, eight per kilo, 10 per kilo, 12 per kilo, 14, 16,
18. So if you want big ones and you want to sound like, you want to sound like you know what you're talking about.
You want U6s.
At the, you can confidently go to a fish counter in a market and say, have you got U6? Yeah.
Or U8s.
Or U8s are good too.
And over Christmas, the best way to eat them, like in the book that we put out, is just skewer them, take out the vein whole, and then barbecue them whole. Because the head's the favourite part of my missus. I normally get all the tails, she normally gets all the heads.
I love it.
I won't eat the heads, but I certainly use them to. They don't go in the bin, that's for sure. The heads and the shells all end up in a pot. Everything that is in my house that comes on a bone ends up in a pot.
That's the way to do it.
And
I end up with stocks and soups and all sorts of craziness.
So that's the best way. You buy the whole thing, whether it be a whole fish, a whole prawn, or a whole lobster, a whole crab. So you keep everything because it all costs the same money.
It does. And you're paying them the same amount of kilo for shell as you are for the meat
itself.
Correct. Exactly right. So it's very much. And I think going into that Christmas hot weather thing, crustaceans. I would go there first, and maybe fish and oysters
Later,
or in cooler months. Or,
definitely.
But some fish are good. Like, we have great snapper from Port Phillip Bay through the summer.
It's just the texture of the actual fish changes. It's not the quality of the fish, the texture of the fish.
Mm. Mm.
So if we bring up farmed fish, though, let's say, which does a farmed salmon actually ever get to work harder in the cooler months? Or we're just talking wild. We're talking there's in the context of wild fish. I think we should say that as well.
Yeah, the thing is with the salmon, it also has a dodgy period as well.
Yes.
Because it has its spawning period.
Yes, where, exactly. Again, it's all about the spawning. They're a lot fattier, the flesh is a lot softer. So when you obviously finish, fillet it, pinbone it, you get tears in the flesh. You've got to be a lot more delicate when you're handling it.
Yeah, but that's Atlantic salmon?
I use Ora King salmon.
From New Zealand.
Yeah.
Okay, because
which
I'm
is delicious.
It is beautiful, isn't it?
But
Sorry.
I sort of want to get onto the context before we have some more messages and some music. I want to get onto the context of assume that I know nothing and I'm going into one of our 4, 5, 6 markets that we have around Melbourne, mm-hmm. where they do have a fish counter. What am I looking for, firstly, at this time of the year? So if I want to do some fish for dinner tonight or tomorrow for lunch, what am I going to go and look for? What am I going to ask for? And this is a question to both of you. Mm-hmm. Because I want to think about seasonality and locality. So what is a good fish to buy at this time of the year?
Well, at the moment, you can get beautiful rigor mortis, big shiny-eyes, firm-fleshed snapper, which are locally caught, caught. Whiting as well is at the moment plentiful and of a big size, King George whiting. Obviously, the bycatch sand whiting, all the lesser whitings.
Yes.
Because it's like dory.
They're lovely.
Mm. You have John Dory, then King Dory, then Mirror Dory, then
Silver Dory.
Some of
like members
dory.
Of the royal family.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
John
Rocky.
Dory again, yes. It's, I wouldn't say it's a local catch. It's more of a New Zealand local mm-hmm. catch. So if we're talking local... Mm. And New Zealand's part of it. John Dory flounder are fantastic this time of the year. Hapuka as well, blue eye. And Baskarupa if you can get it.
Can I go back to something you said then, just for people listening? Rigor mortis. Now, I know that that is the best.
You happens
know,
when you cark
when, it. When, yeah, exactly. And chefs get excited. Oh, the fish came in still in rigor. But how can you tell that? Or how will you know that the fishmonger is giving you... Like, how,
right
how can you tell just through the glass?
It's basically, if you get a nail... You can hammer it in with this rigor mortis fish because it's that firm.
It's so fresh.
And it's also, it's not flat or limp. It's actually firm and normally with a slight kink in it. As it's come up and it's died, it's
still looks formed a bit shocked.
Yes, a bit shocked.
Imagine that's what I'm going to look like in rigor mortis too if things go well.
If you were to cook that whole, it's a lot easier to deal with.
Right.
If you're trying to fillet it, you've got to wait till the rigor settles down.
Okay.
Otherwise you lose.
How long does that take?
Oh, not too long. 3 or 4 hours.
Day.
Yeah.
Three
so you could buy it that morning in rigor and have it for dinner that night.
But the actual freshness of the fish is not going to go any worse. It's just a true indication that it's just been caught.
Mm-hmm.
Rigor mortis settles down. Then you fill it. It's the same quality with it before 4 hours, 6 hours later.
Donovan Cook and Hilary McNevin are my guests. We are talking all things fish and seafood, of course. We'll come to a little bit later a dinner that's happening and more about the book, both of your books, actually. Are you writing another one, Hilary?
I've just been editing one, actually, that's going to be released in August.
Excellent.
But nothing to do with seafood.
Right. But you do have, of course, your book, which is Fish.
Yes, from many years ago.
No, it's not that many years ago.
2008 it came out.
Really?
Yeah, that's a while ago. Crikey. I was younger then.
We were all younger then, my dear. Even the young people listening were younger. They're probably still at high school. And Donovan, your book was now. Is that 6 months since?
This is Donovan's fourth book. Just
yes,
if
but
we
this particular
it.
One from
yeah,
the
came
Atlantic.
Out at Christmas time,
yeah.
And then we just thought let's push it again for seafood in winter because we just think everyone should be eating seafood, and it's a beautiful book.
Well, I also want to know what we should do with some of this seafood. So it's fine to go and buy it, but when we come back from this quick little musical interlude, where we three, because of our era, are going to dance around the studio, we will in fact talk about what you can cook at this time of the year, what's good to be cooking when you go to your fishmonger or to the market and buy your seafood, not at the supermarket. It's 24 minutes past one. You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 has a huge range of programs available for podcast. In fact, Joy is one of the largest podcasting communities on community radio. If you haven't checked out our podcasting service, you're missing out. Visit joy.org.au. Click on the podcast tab and you'll find a list of Joy programs regularly sharing the best interviews, news and reviews. There's tens of thousands of hours for you to enjoy, so check it out now. joy.org.au. Your community is our business. Joy 94.9.
This is Joy 94.9, 29 minutes to two. That shriek you heard came from my guest, Hilary McNevin, whose book, A Guide to Fish, is still available, I'm sure, at your favourite bookshop. Ask for it. If they don't have it, make them order it, and we'll get another print run for you, Hilary.
Thank you.
Also here is Donovan Cook. He's from The Atlantic. His book, The Atlantic at Home, co-written by Hilary McNevin. Co-written.
It was very
collaboration.
Much a
collaboration.
No, it was very much a team effort, actually. It was great, a great process with our friend Sarah as well.
Yeah, very good fun.
And we are, of course, talking all things fishy and seafood. Before we go any further, Darren of Footscray has become a member, which means that, Darren, you're in the draw to win the smart car from Mercedes-Benz. Berwick, you've got until the 30th of June, so a couple of days left. Should you wish to be in the draw to win that car, you just have to go online to joy.org.au, click on the membership tab, and you can join online, or you can call 1300-JOY949 and speak to the front desk, and they will happily take your money. So as little as $22 if you're less than 18, $36 if you're on a concession, $72 for a full membership, $96 for a family, which can be you, your partner, your dog, your cat, whatever you call family, we'll call family as well. And if you are a business, of course, $165, which is tax deductible because you are a business. So jump online and become a member, and you can be in the draw to win a car. Not every day you can win a car.
I'd like to win a car.
That piece of music from Mercedes-Benz. Berwick.
From Mercedes-Benz. Yes. Thank you, Berwick. Thank you.
That piece of music was, of course, Boogie Wonderland by Earth, Wind and Fire. Because we're all born in a particular year, we actually thought that we could play some music from our time rather than all this stuff that we listen to.
Young people. My grandfather used to call it ya-ya music.
Ya-ya music.
You and your ya-ya music. I love that experience.
Now, we are talking seafood, and of course, we want to hear from you. 0427-JOY949. Send us a message. You can email onair@joy.org.au or send a tweet to cravings_JOY949. We're very interested to know if there are questions you have about fish and seafood and what you should be buying and where. Now, we talked about sort of what to buy. I'm wondering, how do we cook things differently in the winter? So if we have got some snapper or some bass grouper and we want to talk about that in particular, how do we cook it? What's the technique so that it's best?
Well, basically, it all depends what is the flavour you're going to match with it. Say, for instance, if you're going to have something meaty like duck confit, then you'd pan fry with duck fat. So the flavour of the duck fat permeates the outside of the flesh. And
should
you
we be having two proteins like that together? That almost seems a bit sinful to me.
Well, they actually work. To be quite honest, like, I use a lot of meat and fish combinations. Would it be pork belly and shellfish, or would it be chorizo sausage with even salmon? Or
I worked for Henry Harris in the UK, and gosh, many, many years ago now in the 90s, he did a wonderful scallop dish. I was a slab of a girl now. Scallops and with duck confit. It was one of the most popular dishes.
Yeah, I do it with black pudding and all sorts. Yeah.
A little cafe over in Footscray, newly opened, called Rudimentary.
Yes.
They do, I think, no, I actually had it in the city, scrambled eggs with chorizo and scallops for breakfast.
Yum. Yeah,
delicious.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. So I don't think there's anything wrong with matching, putting those proteins together.
The thing is, at the moment, you've got truffles coming into season. There's a recipe in the book, which is black bream on papillote with truffle, celery,
vegetables. Cooked in paper or cooked in the bag.
The perfume from the truffle goes all the way through the fish. So it all depends what your product with the fish. The fish is always a star, but you have to have some form of a complement. Would it be celery, would it be parsnip? And then those strong vegetable flavours will adhere themselves even to things like beef cheek and fish.
Mm-hmm. Beef cheek and fish together.
Mm. Okay.
It would have to be, a feisty fish.
So we're talking, I just mentioned bass grouper, and I think we want to talk about that because it's also something that's particularly good at this time of year.
It's particularly good at this year, and it's really quite difficult to get all the time. For me, it's my favourite piece of fish to cook. It's a very similar texture to European cod. The flavour itself as well is very similar to cod. It's not as much moisture content as something like a harpooker or a blue eye.
Can you salt that like you would salt a cod?
Yep. Exactly the
same.
And
dry it and have that sort of bacala.
That's it, exactly the same.
So as long as it's meaty. For people who haven't had European cod or haven't been overseas or, had the opportunity to try it. So, it's meaty and strong white flake.
And that's perfect with something like a little pancake with truffle, some slippery jack mushrooms and beef cheek.
Oh, I'm going to have to go and eat after this now.
You're going on a diet anyway, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, and fish is good for dieting. We all need to eat.
I'm not steaming fish. That's to ruin
but also
fish.
And these are wonderful flavour winter combinations, but there's not. You can still just grill a piece of fish.
Yeah, you can.
Because it's with some lemon and parsley.
Perfect piece of local snapper grilled on a hot... Grilled on a hot barbecue, lemon or sauce vieille, sauce antibas, something very simple.
What was the second sauce you said?
Antibas.
Because that, can you tell everyone what that is? That's one of my
basically
favorites.
It's just chopped shallots, chopped garlic, olive oil, diced olives, diced tomato, beautiful. Lemon juice, coriander, basil.
Southern France.
That's yum.
Flavors.
Now, sauce antibas, we'll spell that A-N-T-I-B-O-I-S.
That's it.
It's a beautiful one.
That's why Hillary was helping me. She does all the spelling.
Yeah.
I was going to say, and I'm sure any one of the good cookbooks that you can find at Books for Cooks and elsewhere, because we're going to talk about Books for Cooks in a minute, can tell you how to prepare that sauce. And people also need to understand that you can experiment with some of these ideas where you can, if you don't like olives, you can take those out and you can put something else in.
Correct.
I really like peas with fish. I think peas
beautiful.
Are a wonderful compliment.
Oh, beautiful. So I love in September, sort of, it's still cool enough.
Petit pois à la française, classic. Peas stewed with pancetta, onions, lettuce, and then you put it with a nice piece of pan-fried John Dory.
See, I love cooked lettuce as well.
Cool. I was about to say gem lettuce, lettuce with...
I use a little baby cod.
Pea puree with scallops. Mm. Yeah. Oh, listen to us.
Well, these are things that are good for us to eat, and we can eat this in winter, and it's rather than having to think, oh, God, I've got to make a salad, and where do I find something that's seasonal, so rocket or spinach or something... you can actually cook lettuce and have these sorts of things, which are really good winter complements to fish.
So, for instance, you could get some nice scallops, slice them raw, mix them with green apple, some raw celeriac, a little bit of olive oil, lemon juice, chopped parsley, and there you go. Tartare of scallops.
Oh, yum.
I have a question from Young Mel on Twitter.
Oh, hello, Young Mel. I'm glad you're listening, doll.
What's last year, for you, Donna, I ate the most beautiful sea bass in Italy.
Yep.
What's the best Australian substitute?
Sea bass is no real substitute in Australia. One that looks very similar is barramundi. However, the texture of the flesh and the flavour are totally different. I'd stick with something like blue eye.
Yes.
For the similar texture, similar flavour, but sea bass is one of my dream fishes. Yes. And that helped me get a very nice carbon footprint as well as turbot.
But there it goes on the carbon footprint.
Can I ask then, is that one of the fish you missed most from Europe that you actually can't replace?
So Joy, 94.9 weather.
It's the apocalypse.
No, it's not the apocalypse. It's just that the next door studio was still switched on. That's my fault. And there's some training going on next door. I do apologise.
Not at all. But so what are the fish you miss from Europe mostly?
Turbot, monkfish, sea bass.
Yeah. And sea bass, so you're saying to young Mel to get her hands on some blue eye?
Something like blue eye or even a snapper is a very similar sort of texture, but it's never going to be the same.
And that was a question that came to us via Twitter.
Via Twitter,
so you can tweet cravings_joy949. Your Twitters will Twitter into the studio and we will read them. You can, of course, send a text message 0427-JOY949. You can email onair@joy.org.au or you can be like Damien from Shepparton. You can go to the website and you can become a member of Joy to win a car. Damien, thank you as well for your membership. He says thank you for continuing to support and focus on regional, rural and remote Victoria and Australia. Which sort of brings us to a good point. I want to talk about some of the availability of stuff sort of along the Great Ocean Road, the Ballerine Peninsula down to Gippsland, because there's a lot of, given it's still cold, very cold in some parts down there, it's probably a good time also to look for things like abalone. Some of those sorts of things that come from regional Victoria.
You know, flathead is a beautiful fish as well, which is caught out near there.
Yeah. I think that a major concern I find for consumers, because I get, and that was the other aspect I took on for the book as well, is it's really pricey.
It is very pricey.
Well, depending on the time of year, I've seen it better priced now because it's cooler weather, and I think that's another thing to push about seasonality, isn't it? Definitely. When it's more abundant, it's cheaper.
3 months ago, snapper was $4 to $5 a kilo more expensive than it is now.
Okay.
It's better now than it was 4 to 5 months ago, and it's cheaper.
Yeah.
So you don't need to have too many brain cells to figure that one out.
Yeah.
Yes, correct. And you know, down around Metung and Lakes Entrance, there's lots of really good fishing down there at all times of the year, and to get hold of some good local fish down there is a good thing.
I think it's really important to, because we're not saying don't buy seafood in summer or anything like that, but what we're saying is think about where it's all coming from to get the best quality product.
Correct.
And that's about knowing the regions and supporting your local fishermen. Mm. And I think the biggest message for the book, The Atlantic at Home, was that Donovan said the better your relationship with your fishmonger, the better seafood cook you will become. Because whether we like it or not, Pete, and you and I have talked about this for years.
Yes, we
since
have.
People are scared to cook seafood at home. And that was one of the goals of the book, was to get people to just be brave. And
we do have another message. Nana Elements is fishing for sardines on the end of St Kilda Pier. Do you think she will enjoy success?
Sardines, St Kilda Pier?
I'm not really sure.
I don't actually think, Nana Elements, that they are sardines.
No, there could be something else.
Put the cream sherry down and go home, Nana.
Yes, and go have a little brandy. Look, we have to have a couple of messages and then we're going to return. I was going to play some more music, but we're going to run out of time. We may not have time for more music.
We do like a chat.
Yeah, we do. Some messages here on Joy 94.9. We'll be back with Donovan Cook and Hilary McNevin momentarily, where we'll continue our discussion about fish.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 in Melbourne, joy.org.au for the world.
Hilary McNevin and Donovan Cook, you are on Cravings with me, Pete Dillon, and these two wonderful guests here on Joy 94.9. We are talking things fish and seafood, and of course, we've discussed this already, that seafood and fish is very much something that you should be eating in winter, particularly oysters, because they are in season. We've talked a lot about going to the market or a fishmonger and buying the right fish and getting hold of the right stuff and asking questions. Where do we go, first of all, to find somebody who has that knowledge? We've got to go to a reputable market, obviously.
Yep. Well, basically, I go to South Melbourne Market.
Mm-hmm. I'm Queen Vic.
And basically,
I'm Footscray.
There you go.
I kind of also know what I'm talking about, so I can see the fish or whatever.
Well, Hilary, I hope we both do as well.
But
somebody who's like trying to cook fish at home and are a little bit nervous, you got to approach one of the people behind the desk, at the counter, not so much make friends with them, but show some interest, ask them what the best thing is at the time of the year, and make sure when you go back the next week, you try and find that person to build a relationship. Then, before you know it, they will give you stuff which is not actually on the display. They will get it from the market, from you, the big market.
Look, it's the same as if you're buying wine. You go to if you go into a large chain, you're not going to get you're not going to get the service that you're going to get if you walk into a small independent retail like Armadale Cellars or Sedden Wine Store, where you can go in and you can actually ask questions and you can tell them what you like and they'll start to get away from drinking. So, you know, if you're always buy Chardonnay, an ABC person, or you only drink Sauvignon Blanc or you only drink Shiraz, go into one of those independents and start asking questions, saying, look, I like this. This is the thing I like about wine.
It's like, as I said last time I was on the show, if you go to any of the markets, would it be the Queen Vic or the South Melbourne, your generic fish on display. Those generic fish are what people know. Snapper, swordfish, salmon. That's it. If you want something else, you're going to have to pluck up the courage to ask the guy or the girl, be at the counter, and they'll actually get it from the main market for you. The main market works on Tuesdays, Thursdays, Fridays.
And I think it's also about, though, if you're really doing this for the first time, shop around a bit. Like at the Queen Vic Market years ago, I'd buy a piece of fish from one counter, then I went down and got some oysters from someone else, and just to see who talked to me and who was actually wanting me
and
to be there.
And who's engaged with you, exactly.
And I don't go at its busiest time, because they're just going to go, it's all good today, it's all good today, keep
it's
moving.
Fresh,
they've got so
out,
many
out,
people
out,
to serve. So I try to time it that there's less people and there's more time for them to give me some attention.
And I guess that also, once you create that relationship with a fishmonger, it's the same as a butcher, as wine, as all sorts of things. You can start to ask them questions about, for sea bass, for example, are there different sorts of sea bass? Do they come from different parts of the ocean? And when should I be buying them? So I know we wanted to talk a little bit about sea bass.
Well, sea bass, and from Young Mel's question, Young Mel, you have inspired this question, because, Donovan, what you were saying, there's different kinds of sea bass as well. So like whiting, like dory.
Yeah, for sure. You have, they're both called sea bass in English, but in French one's called bas de ligne and one's called loup de mer. Loup de mer is the wolf of the sea.
Yeah.
It's a lot softer textured to a normal bas de ligne. This is from the Mediterranean side of France. So warmer water, hence the softer texture.
But if you're on the other side of France,
it's a lot firmer, and the colour of the actual skins are more of a bluey colour, and the other one's more of a greyy blue. So they're the same fish, same family, but just because of different parts of the sea.
And so you could say the variation occurs here then as well with dories and that kind of thing?
Exactly.
Sort of
just what we've been discussing about temperature of the sea.
Yes.
Say if you're going to get something from a warm region like tropical North Queensland, it's a totally different texture to what'll be down here.
Should we ever buy fish that has been frozen?
Well, there's some fish you can only buy frozen, like the Patagonian toothfish from 51 Glacier.
Yeah.
Amazing fish.
I don't know that any of us will be eating Patagonian toothfish because we probably don't know what to do with it.
Well,
it's a beautiful fish and extremely expensive, and it's on the endangered species. They're actually farming it in a special way.
Yep.
And it's very, very, very expensive.
Mm.
And they only sell it in slabs.
You need to be one of those crown high rollers to afford it, I should think.
And you only want about 100, 120 grams of it, and then you're done.
Mm. Yeah. I think it's important to know, too, that technology now on fishing fishing boats is such that fish are snap frozen. They're you know, and I think they're treated and managed well and carefully.
Because when I was getting the carbon footprint before, I was getting Toro from Japan, which is probably from Queensland or
probably
wherever.
Via Japan.
But it would come in frozen solid and has to be kept at minus 60.
Yes. Mm.
But it was impeccable. It was amazing quality.
Mm. So I want to jump back to, and I'm going to put my consumer hat on. So I go into the market. I've had a couple of glasses of Dutch Courage to summon up the energy to go and speak to the woman or the man behind the counter.
It's not too busy.
It's not too busy. They engage me in a discussion. What are some of the very simple questions I should ask about?
Firstly, you do anything, use all your senses before you go to that
smell
counter.
Smell it.
You don't even have to talk to anybody.
Mm,
you can get a whiff and you know straight away.
So if
it smells like fish,
strong fishy smell, go away.
Walk away.
Mm, because it shouldn't smell like that until it shouldn't
smell like anything. People who tell me I don't eat fish because it's too fishy, I don't think they've ever had fresh fish.
Well, they've probably had some fish and chips at a high street fish and chippery.
Dodgy Brothers, yeah.
Yes. So it shouldn't smell fishy.
Yep.
The eyes of a fish, if there's whole fish, they should be
glazy,
clear.
Glassy, really, like a really big shine.
Almost like a marble.
Yes, mm-hmm. Correct. And then if you go to the next step, the feel of the fish, you should be still slimy.
Should be slimy.
Can I have a look at that fish, please? You want to look at the whole fish?
The whole fish.
You can say, can I have a look at it? You ask that and touch it?
Yeah. And then if it's got the gills, the gills should be really red. If there's no gills and no guts, that's also an indication that it's not super fresh. If it's gilled and gutted, they've had it for a while.
We do have a message from Zoe. Thank you, Zoe. Loving the show. I just finished working and on my way home, I think I might pick up some sea bass. Is it the right time of the year for Zoe to be getting sea bass?
Unfortunately, can't get sea bass in this country, Zoe. You've got to go to France for that, love.
So what's she going to get on her way home? She's going to stop at the fishmonger.
She needs to get something like blue eye.
Blue eye.
Or she should get a snapper. Or she should get something with a little bit of texture, a flaked kite fish, maybe even half hook if she could find that.
Zoe, I hope that's helpful, so you won't buy sea bass because you can't.
Native here.
And also, I want to talk about some of the sustainability. So what are some of the best fish we can buy from a sustainability point of view?
Well, that is about what we're talking about. So seasonality, what's in season, what's abundant. Smaller fish. It's interesting when you said those main fish people walk in and see are all salmon, tuna, swordfish.
There you go. They're the common ones
and
everybody relates to.
Yes, and they're... I haven't eaten swordfish for many years.
Is it in danger?
It's just a huge... In terms of... It's easier and better for the ocean to eat the smaller fish. They multiply quicker. Their gestation periods are quite short. Whereas a swordfish, they only don't have that many babies at once. Mm. They take a long time to gestate. And it's like orange roughy, like deep sea fish. Everything for them takes time.
Orange roughy what we used to call coral trout?
No, coral trout's a reef fish from far north Queensland.
And orange roughy is?
Is sea perch. Is another name for it, wasn't it?
It's a beautiful fish, but it's been fished to extinction almost. Mm.
Yeah, and because it takes so long to reproduce. So that's why people go for sardines and in terms of shellfish, mussels and things like that.
And mussels are beautiful.
Delicious.
Yeah. Oh, they're
and there's so much things, so much you can do with it. Thank you, Zoe. She's decided blue eye it is. She's getting on the way home for dinner.
Happy dinner.
Let us know what time we can be around and I'll come and have blue eye.
We'll bring a bottle of something.
Yeah, bottle of, nice. But, if we were going to catch up with Nana Elements who's fishing
cream
for sardines. No, we'd be a fatty sausage and a glass of Chablis, I should think, which is... Chablis is great with fish.
Yes, beautiful.
Oh, it is.
Now,
it's
I also want to quickly...
And so oysters too, so I had to say that.
We're sort of getting to this time where we're going to need to wrap things up in the next little while. You can drink red wine with some of these fish.
Correct. For instance, there's a dish on the menu at the moment which works really well with the Pinot. It's trumpet mushroom powder, crusted harpook, pan-fried with earthy lentils, mushrooms, caramelized shallots.
So is it a medium bodied Pinot, a lighter bodied Pinot? You wouldn't want
Something earthy. You know, it'll tell you if you want something to be resembling the forest floor, then your accompaniment to any dish should be
something that's earthy.
The forest floor. Mushrooms, lentils, truffles, and celery, Pinot potatoes.
Pinot Noir, and when you were talking about duck confit before, Pinot Noir and duck.
And
again, you can even have Shiraz with it if the Shiraz isn't something that's going to burn your mouth out at the end of it. It's got a nice rounded flavour of food.
A bit more Cote d'Aron kind of Shiraz.
Yeah, correct.
And then again, you have a red wine sauce accompanying the fish. And then again, you'd use something like even red mullet. Pan-fried red mullet with red wine sauce.
Because there's a lot of old sort of rules from the 70s, I think, whereas you have, you know, white wine with white meat and red wine with red meat. And
as long as you don't put Coke and ice cubes in the red wine, it's fine.
Anybody that's doing that to red wine, unless it's coming out of
turn
a car,
the radio off now.
Should be taken out and flogged in the public, in the city square. So I really like, so you're talking about oysters, at this time of the year, a really chilled Riesling with oysters, where there's those beautiful aromatics that sit really well with the oysters. Mm. And you can drink white wine in winter.
Yes.
Oh, yes, of course you can. And can I just, when you were asking about the sustainability, I think Zoe's on the right track too, just thinking on the day, what am I going to get? So diversity of choice is also really important in sustainability.
And being open to trying something new. Yeah. If you go to your fishmonger and they say, look, I've got this thing, this particular fish, I've got some mackerel or I've got some whatever it might be, are you willing to give that a try? And this is how you might cook it.
I've got a dish with mackerel in the book, again, with big flavours. Caramelized shallots with sherry vinegar and lentils. And then you could add ham hock. A lot of people do the big shop on a Saturday and a Sunday at the market. And if they're like me and my missus, we buy everything we see. So if I buy some chorizo, you've always got some left.
Yes.
So the idea of the book also is to use what you have to make something. So you can use some chorizo, some white beans. You don't even have to cook them. You can buy tinned white beans now.
And all of a sudden,
they're great.
You can pan fry a piece
of fish with beans.
That's it.
Yeah, well, cannellini beans with some lemon rind and parsley and garlic with a piece of grilled snapper on top.
Perfect.
Because I met someone once who said to me they only eat salmon. And I just said, where's the fun in that? You're not... And she went, no.
I only eat chicken.
Yeah, I know.
That makes that person a moron.
And they're just focusing on one. We have come across a few morons.
We have indeed. We're going to have a couple of messages and we shall return to wrap this up and talk about a dinner happening on the 15th of July with Tim White from Books for Cooks. We did talk about Books for Cooks before, which is, of course, at the Atlantic and Donovan and Seafood. You are on Joy 94.9. It's 5 minutes to two.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
A couple of minutes to two now. We've got a couple of quick messages. Somebody listening, Matt in Fitzroy, says, just got some oysters. I'm going to put a little raspberry vinaigrette on them tonight. Feeling inspired thanks to you, Donovan and Hilary. So thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
And also thanks Chris of East Melbourne. Happy to renew his membership. Thank you, Chris, from East Melbourne. So that's we've got three new members or three renewals in this hour. So that's terrific. All in the draw to win a car. Now, there's a couple of dinners coming up. One on the 15th of July, which is... based on the book.
Yep.
Based on your book, The Atlantic at Home. This is in cahoots with the lovely Tim White from Books for Cooks, who've just moved, haven't they?
Yes, to Queen Vic Market.
To Queen Vic Market, which is much easier than me going to Gertrude Street.
Yep, I hear.
Tell us quickly about the dinner.
Well, basically, we're going to do three dishes from the book. One is showcasing oysters, so we're going to do oyster velouté with lettuce and truffles.
Yum.
Then we're going to do... classic way of cooking I do at the restaurant, which is olive oil confit. We do olive oil confit ocean trout, and then we're going to do a Bascarupa roasted with piperard, chorizo, fino sherry and mussels.
And if people want to grab tickets or come along, they can just go to the Atlantic website.
Yes.
That's
And the email address is reservations@theatlantic.com.
reservations@theatlantic.com.au or pop into Books for Cooks, of course.
Matching wine as well,
excellent. And then there's another winter seafood dinner on the 12th of August. Hilary,
and that's a seafood and winter dinner. Can I just say also the book dinner, and I'll probably do it, we'll do it in the second dinner in August too. I'll be interviewing Donovan and we'll talk about the process of making the book. And
that's an excuse to go along and
things about us having, we'll crack a few bad jokes and talk a bit like this. And
yes.
Well, it's disappointing if you don't crack bad jokes, I think.
I think so too. And we'll both be at both, clearly. So hopefully we'll get you along, Pete, somewhere.
Look, I'd be delighted to be there because I do love a bit of seafood in winter. Mark and Joe are taking you travelling. You're going to Escape Pod next, taking you through until 3 o'clock. And then, of course, all of our specialist programs right through Saturday afternoon up until disco time or nap time, depends what is your want on a Saturday night. For me, I think I'll be guzzling some red wine down my neck because I'm doing Dry July. If you go to Dry July, do a search for SatMag Fags. That is our Saturday magazine team. We will be doing Dry July and raising money for adults living with cancer. So jump on board and have a look at that. It's been a pleasure to have you with me, Hilary. Thank you.
Pete, thanks for having us on.
Pleasure to have you in as well, Donovan. Good to see
always
you again.
Always a pleasure. It's always good to reminisce about the old times.
And that bloody carbon footprint.
These two go way back.
Oh, we do. We're like, well, you and I go back longer, but that's a discussion for another day because we do have to wrap it up. Mark and Joe with you, going travelling on the Escape Pod in 3, 2, 1. Hello.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.